All right, joining me today at Pit Pass Network is Colin Fambro. Colin, you worked in NASCAR for a lot of years. You worked on many different teams, different pit crews. You're a two-time pit crew champion. So, talk a little bit about how you got started in the sport and what drew you to the sport.
I mean, I think I was interested from a young age, but I guess I really started getting interested when I was in when I was in junior college at my hometown, and just wasn't, really interested in the things that I was doing where I was at. So I was actually cutting class one day and saw an infomercial for NASCAR Technical Institute, and jumped online afterwards and looked at kind of some of the options and some of the programs that they had available, and convinced my parents that it was a good idea to go check it out. And we went to look at it, and on the way home, kind of decided that that was that was kind of what I was going to do. I had no idea it was going to lead to the career that I ended up having, but if you want to be in racing, especially big time auto racing like NASCAR, you've got to be in North Carolina.
So how long after you saw that infomercial was it before you signed up and started school?
I was probably 6 months, I think.
And then how long after that was it before you got your first opportunity, and how did your first opportunity come about?
So my first, it was during school, actually. This program, the NTI program, was like a year. I think it was like 13 months, but basically you did a new class or learned a new skill every 3 weeks, and you then you cycled into the next, in the next program. But one of my teachers at the time, it was on the NASCAR side. It was Fabrication 2. And one of my instructors was actually a tire changer for Carl Edwards on his cup car for Roush. And he kind of jokingly made a comment one day, "Hey, does anybody want to go pit this ARCA race?" And I like raised my hand. I was like, "Dude, I'll do it." And he kind of started laughing. He's like, "Well, he's like, I was just kind of kidding." He's like, "I just really don't want to go do this." And so I started asking him more and more about it. And he, grabbed me one day after class. He's like, "Hey, Roush is actually trying to start a developmental program. They're trying to get guys that are, young and athletic and kind of add some speed into the pit crews. Would that be something you would be interested in? It doesn't pay anything, but you get to come to the shop, you'll get to train, you get to learn." And I was like, "Yes, absolutely, yes." So that's kind of where my first opportunity came from. I went, tried out with a bunch of different guys, and they decided to keep, I think, seven of us at the time, is what they used to do for pit stops. I think that was when we had Ketchikan Man. So we had seven guys going over the wall at that point in time. But yeah, they kept, I don't know, seven or eight of us, and we just started training and practicing, and it's kind of where everything started for me.
So you get your first big break with Roush. Now, did you ever pit for Roush in any of NASCAR's top three divisions or in the ARCA program?
No, I didn't actually. I so at the time there's a young kid that you might know, some of you might have heard of. His name's Joey Logano. But I met him, he came through, he was like 13 or 14 years old. And he was driving a Hooters Pro Cup car for Roush, and the race team didn't want to dedicate any of their regular pit crew guys to Joey's deal. One, just because travel, conflicts, the big time pit crew guys were, doing Cup and Xfinity races and didn't have time to mess with the Hooters Pro Cup stuff. So they needed a group of guys to pit Joey's car, and so that's what we did. My first gig was pitting for Joey Logano in the Hooters Pro Cup series.
So that's how you got your start there into the sport. You got started with Joey Logano, and that relationship lasted for quite a while, did it not?
Yeah, we so the Logano's kind of had a falling out with Roush over the contract situation, and we got after that kind of happened, we signed at Gibbs, or he signed at Gibbs very, very soon after, maybe a week or two after the falling out at Roush happened. And we picked up all of our stuff that we had. We were in this little shop out at the drag strip and in Mooresville, and we picked up everything and moved it into the Xfinity shop at Joe Gibbs Racing in Huntersville. And so our cars were kind of now being set up and tended to by the same guys that were preparing the Xfinity cars for the Busch Series drivers at the time. So kind of a really neat deal. It was kind of like going from the outhouse to the penthouse, if you can put it that way. But that was kind of where everything kind of started to ramp up for me, as they Joe Gibbs didn't have a developmental program, and so they asked us, did we want to come over and continue pitting Joey's car and just practice at Gibbs. And I got over at Gibbs, and man, they were letting me work out with their pit crew guys. They were letting me practice with their guys, fill in for somebody who was, hurt or sick. And I got so much experience, being over there in the Joe Gibbs Racing shop, that it was hugely beneficial for me in my career. But yeah, Joey and I ended up working together later on down the road when I worked at Penske. So it was, and I still to this day consider Joey a friend. So it's been a relationship that's kind of stood the test of time.
And you mentioned moving everything over to Gibbs. And if I remember right, that was right into an Xfinity program, right?
So we still ran one more year at Hooters Pro Cup through Gibbs. And Joey wasn't old enough to move up to the Xfinity car, so they actually moved me to one of their Xfinity cars the following year. And that year, I think we had a bunch of different drivers. We had Joey ran the car, Tony Stewart, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, all those guys rotated in and out of the 20 car. And I was able to, win, be a part of Joey's first win at Kentucky, when it was back when we ran the old red and black GameStop car. But that was a really, really fun year, getting the experience to kind of pit for all those, huge name guys that I had, grown up watching. But yeah, that was ended up being like a year later, because Joey wasn't old enough to run Xfinity at that time.
So who was your first win with on an Xfinity crew? Was it with Joey or was it with
No,
Gibbs?
it was Tony Stewart. Yeah, Tony Stewart at Daytona was my first one. And man, that was pretty wild, pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I remember Joey burst onto the scene and he won pretty quick. Like it was, I believe, single digit races when he won that race at Kentucky. He hadn't been racing very long, and I think he won Dover that year, maybe a couple others as well. Were you pitting all those races?
Yeah, so he I was but yeah, he won two or three that year, I think. But Kentucky, being the first one, and a lot of people didn't don't know this, but Kentucky used to be the racetrack that all the Cup guys, all the Cup teams went to do their mile and a half testing. And back, before Kentucky was put on the schedule, I think that was the first year it was put on the schedule, if I remember right. I'll have to go back and look at that. But Joey, when he got to Gibbs, ended up doing a lot of the testing for the Cup cars, because the Cup drivers didn't have any interest in going and just burning lap after lap, all day with data on these cars. They had other things to do, so they would put Joey in that car. So Joey had, hundreds and thousands of laps at Kentucky Speedway. So when he showed up in his first race there in the Xfinity car, he had had so much track time and experience in the Cup car there, that he, I think he just really took to it in that Xfinity car.
All right, so you're at Gibbs, you're with Logano. Everybody knows Logano at Gibbs didn't really pan out once it got to the cup level. Whether, there's a lot of theories about maybe he was too quick, rushed along, and then we've seen Gibbs kind of have a rotating driver there outside of their big three. And now even the big three, we've got, Kyle's left this year. So was it just not working out at Gibbs and he wanted to leave, or did they want to get rid of him? How did that work out? And were you still there at that time?
No, I had moved on to another team, but I think ultimately what happened was that group of guys that was on that 20 car, those were Tony Stewart's guys, and they fit his personality, and they knew what they liked to do to make their cars go fast. And oftentimes, when you get a new driver in, that driver's driving style, their personality, whatever it is, may not mesh with the group that was already there. May not like necessarily what Tony liked in his cars. And they, him being a young guy and them having a proven, championship winning team, they just expected him to come in and just, hey, you need to adapt to what we're doing versus, hey, we're going to adapt and make this work for you and do everything that we can to make sure that you're successful. So I think that's kind of where the rub ended up happening and why that opportunity really didn't work out like they had hoped.
So, did you ever get to pit on the cup side for Gibbs?
I did. I pitted a few races for Denny Hamlin. One of the tire changers had gotten hurt towards the end of the year, and I filled in for the last, I don't know, five or six races for Denny Hamlin. And that was really my first, cup experience was with Gibbs.
Did you get to a chance to win any of those races there?
No, the best we finished, I think it was second or third at Homestead with Denny, and that was as close as I got on the cup side to winning. I mean, we won a ton of races in Xfinity, but when it came to the cup car, I never did get to win a cup race with JGR.
So at that time, a lot of Cup crews and Xfinity crews were the same. So were you pitting both cars on the same weekend, or did you just have the Cup program to worry about?
Well, so back then, when I was at JGR, it was actually quite a bit different that you had Cup crews and you had Xfinity crews, and teams were using the Xfinity crews. Those were their developmental pit crews. So you had a ton of different guys in the building, and everybody's building across the other race teams. It was all the same way. So that, being that it was that way back then, it gave me an opportunity to, pit those higher end race cars that were running up front, and get that experience, because it's a whole nother, I guess, world when you talk about pitting a front running car versus pitting a car that was, 20th or worse. But at that time, I was pitting everything I could pit. I would pit an ARCA car, I would pit a truck, I would pit an Xfinity car. And at the time, I didn't have a ton of experience pitting cars, so I wasn't getting the cup opportunity full time that, I hoped for. And that's ultimately what led me to leave Gibbs and go to another team, is because they told me, hey, if you're gonna pit one of our cup cars, you got to have cup experience. And at that time, I didn't have it, so I had to go out to another team to get it.
Okay, so let me ask you about your mentality. We've heard people talk about it, you guys running out on a pit road with 43 other cars at that time. Everybody's running 50, 60 miles an hour at a lot of places. What's it like, and what is your mentality when you're about ready to jump off the wall?
So I will say that I didn't notice, really didn't notice the other cars that much when I was doing like Hooters Pro Cup. But I'll never forget the first time that I pitted a car at Daytona. And standing up there on the wall and watching those cars come down pit road, I mean, 55 miles an hour on TV looks like it's crawling, right? They look like they're crawling. But when you're standing there on pit wall and you're having to run around and in between cars, it's pretty intense. And I will say that that was really the first time where it kind of registered in my brain that like, hold on a minute. This is like, what am I doing here? That this is a little bit crazy. There are times where you get, cars would brush you with their fender on the way by. They would roll over the end of your toes, like with the tires when they're entering or leaving their pit box, depending on if you were the front of the rear tire changer. It was super, super intense at times. And fortunately I never had a major injury from being hit by a car. I was hit a couple of times, but nothing that was much of a big deal.
Yeah, and by the time you got there, safety had came a long way on pit road. I'm sure that they showed you some footage. There was a race at Homestead, man, I want to say 2002, right in there, where a bunch of guys were hit all at once in a wreck on pit road. Helmets weren't mandatory at that, like people just went flying. And that really I feel like expedited the safety on pit road. So it would have been something crazy if, it's commonplace now to see helmets on every head and all this stuff, but it wasn't that long ago that safety wasn't as important, maybe to the sport, as it needed to be. And at that time on pit road, it could you imagine doing that with no head protection
No
and
way,
whatnot?
no way, no way. Not a chance. Like those guys used to go out there in jeans and a t-shirt and no helmet, and that's absolutely insane. And that was back, before some of those guys even did it when there was no pit road speed. Like people don't realize that, that are new to the sport is pit road. There used to be no pit road speed, and those cars used to fly down pit road at 150 mile an hour and stop in their pit box. And it is a wonder that no more people were actually killed or hit than there was. So I think NASCAR was incredibly lucky from that standpoint. But yeah, by the time that I made it in, helmets were mandated, two-layer fire suits just like the drivers wear. Those were all mandated. Our shoes were SFI rated. We were It was about as safe as you can make it by the time that I made it in. I think 2003 was 2003 or 2004 was the year where they mandated helmets.
All right, so we talked a little bit about Gibbs, and you talked about why you had to leave. Now, where did you go, and what was it like leaving? Did you have to just go to those shops where, did they already know your name? Is it kind of like an NFL free agency where these crew chiefs or owners or how does that even work? For people who don't know, does the owner make the decision, the crew chief, and where did you end up going?
Yeah, I mean the owner and crew chief obviously have a big big input on who pits their race cars, especially back in that day and time. Crew chiefs still do, but that was before pit coaches were really relied upon for recruiting and developing talent. But there's really no free agency. The teams don't really own you the same way like as in other sports. So we do have contracts that you would sign, but you would sign them for a year. But basically it was to the team's benefit. The team, kind of held all the cards in that regard. They could hire and fire, as they pleased. And as a tire changer, as a contract employee, you basically, and back in that time, it was year to year. There were nobody signed multi-year contracts, so your contract would run up at the end of the year, and there would be the silly season shuffle, and you'd show up to Daytona, and all your friends are wearing different shirts and different hats, working for different teams, and that's just kind of how it was back then. But yeah, I mean, you get into the garage area and you start to meet people, and you meet crew chiefs and you meet team owners and you meet drivers and you meet the road crew guys, and they're paying attention to who's good and you know who's not, and you know they absolutely, you know, there's some recruiting that happens, not like, you know, college or anything like that. They just basically come and have a conversation, or try to have a conversation with you away from the racetrack if they want to keep it secret. And you know, then you just kind of iron out your deal, and when your contract's up at the end of the season, you'd say, hey, you know, Mr. Gibbs, I'm leaving this team, and I'm, you know, going to go somewhere else. Or, you know, hey, I'd if y'all, you know, are offering me a new contract, I'd love to stay. So it just kind of depended on what the situation was.
And so where did you, what was it like for you when you left Gibbs? Did somebody come to you or did you go to them and who is it?
Well, so at the time, I had two, there were two coaches at Gibbs, but the head coach was, his name was Paul Alepa. And they basically, you know, we had discussions, you know, towards the end of the season, and it was like, it was essentially like, hey, I know you're wanting to, you know, pit this cup car, but you don't have the experience that we require for our caliber of car. You know, we're not just going to take you from an Xfinity car and let you pit, you know, pit this cup car on a full-time basis. So basically, they told me if I wanted to pit one of their cars, I had to go get cup experience. So I went and sought out a cup job that I could go, that I could get, and get, you know, the experience pitting a cup car, and then, you know, basically reclimb the ladder in the cup series.
Okay, so who did you go and talk to? Did you go and talk to a bunch of teams, or did you have like a limit? You know, like if it's not one of these teams, I'll stay where I'm at.
No, I talked to a few different teams, but I had done some stuff for DEI, and the coach there, his name was Walt Smith. Walt's brother Gary was the coach at JTG Racing, and JTG, you know, I guess they had talked to each other. I reached out to Walt and let, you know, kind of let him know my situation, and he didn't have anything where he was at, and but his brother Gary had a spot at JTG Doherty Racing. So that's, I actually, you know, Gary called me, we came in and did a tryout, you know, with their group, and they offered me that position. So that was my first cup job, was JTG Racing.
And that would have been what year and who was the driver?
Oh gosh, what was that? It was either, it was 2008, I think. 2000, no, it would have been earlier than that. No, it was 2000, yeah, it was 2008. And that was Marcus Ambrose.
And what was that experience like pitting for Marcus for that year? Did you guys kind of, as the team, did you guys know? You know, at that time, there's only two road courses. So did you feel like, man, there's only two shots for us to win? Or maybe you add the plate races and that's six. Or did you guys feel like you go out and do it every week?
Well, I don't, I mean, Marcus was known as a road course racer, but I don't think he had shown that he was going to have success at the road courses, you know, in a stock car yet. So, to me, I didn't really care. I wasn't looking at what we could win, what we couldn't win. My focus was just getting that experience and getting out there every Sunday, you know, so that the other teams could see what I was capable of doing, and you know, then hopefully move to a team that, you know, was capable of winning races. So yeah, I think we ended up running pretty good at the super speedways. I think we ended up running really good in the Daytona 500 that year. But yeah, he did well at the road courses. That was a lot of fun. Pitted Marcus in the Xfinity car. JTG fielded an Xfinity car for Marcus, and we won a few races on that side, so that was a lot of fun. But yeah, at that point in time, you know, my sole focus was, hey, let me get the experience I need to show these front running teams, like, you know, I can be their guy.
Okay, so how many years did you pit over there with Marcus?
I was at JTG for 1 year. And at the end of that first year, Earl Barbin actually came over, and Jimmy Johnson's rear tire changer had gotten hurt. And so they were looking for somebody to pit that car and finish out the season. And he kind of pulled me aside and said, "Hey, Chad would like to talk to you, on Monday." So I went and talked to those guys, and basically Chad said, "Hey, we'd like you to come, be our rear tire changer to finish out this year." And my question was, well, is it going to be my job moving forward? Like, are you guys just going to get me over there for a couple races and then, I'm out? Does the other guy get his job back? Like, how's that going to work? And he really didn't give me a straight answer. He kind of just said, "Look, we'll cross that bridge when we get there." But I ended up telling him that, "Hey, I can't make a move, unless there's a full-time job on the other end of this. Because I've got this full-time job with JTG. They want me back for next year, and I can't just leave an opportunity for, a partial opportunity, even though it was, Hendrick Motorsports and Jimmy Johnson, and I really, really struggled with that decision. But at the time, I was racing. It's a job. It's like anybody. You're not just gonna leave, a full-time job with benefits and things like that to go do some, contract job for 6 months and then you're unemployed. Like, that doesn't make much sense." So I ended up telling them no, but if they wanted to, if they were serious about, having me over there, that I would be happy to talk to them, in the off season when, they kind of had an idea of what they wanted to do for the following year. And, that's what ended up happening. I went over there, I tried out, and then Steve Letard actually hired me for the 24 car for the next year.
So then you got, so that's going to put you on Jeff Gordon's car in what, oh, what is that, 09, 2010?
That was going to be 2009. Yeah.
And so you won, you only ended up with one win in 2009, right?
I don't know. I don't think we won a race in 2009. I think that was the year that Jeff didn't win. Pretty sure.
It might have been. I know he won one race at Texas in the middle of all those winless streaks.
Yeah, I think that was the following year. I don't think we won a race. I don't remember winning a race that
So
year with
you,
Jeff.
so did you, so you never won with Jeff? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I never got to win with Jeff.
So how many years did you pit the 24 car?
So I pit the 24 car the 1 year, and then at the end of that year, or I guess it was the end of the next year, we ended up doing. No, that would have been 2010. Yeah, that would have been 2010. So maybe I was with JTG for 2 years. I can't remember. But 2010 was the year that I pitted the 24 car. So it was 2010 was the year I pitted the 24 car. Because that was at the end of that year. That's when they did the whole pit crew swap thing, where the 48 car, their guys were kind of struggling a little bit. And, we were kind of hitting our stride towards the end of the year. We weren't a part of the championship hunt anymore. And I think it was at Texas, we had wrecked out, and we were picking up our stuff, and they came down and got us and put us on the 48, and we ended up pitting the 48 the rest of the year. And that was pretty intense.
What was that experience like being part of the pit crew for that swap? Because I believe that Texas race is also the one where I believe that's when Jeff Gordon and Jeff Burton had went at it as well on the backstretch a little bit.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was kind of, it was weird. It was kind of surreal. Like, something like that was pretty unheard of. Like, we had, we thought we were done. We were packing up our pit box. Our equipment was packed up and put away. And they ran down and said, "Hey, stop what you're doing, get your pit stuff, and go down to the 48." And at that point in time, we kind of everybody kind of looked at each other, understanding that either we were going down there because they were struggling and they were keep those guys on a short leash, or we were actually going to go pit that car. And we went down there. It was in the middle of a green flag run, and they already had the 48 guys huddled up when we were walking down, and the decision had already been made, and they put us in to pit that car for the rest of that race. It went well, and so they made the decision after that race to just make the swap permanent for the rest of the year.
And so that's in the middle of Jimmy's championship run too, is it not?
It was. Oh, it was. Oh, yeah.
So how awkward was that for the two crews? And did you guys get to celebrate as champions, or did you just kind of step aside?
No, so that was the really awkward part. They invited everybody. Only a couple of the original 48 pit crew guys ended up staying and, going to the party in Miami and then going to Vegas to celebrate the championship. But yes, we did get to go, as the champion tire changers, as the champion pit crew, we were the ones that went. It was pretty awkward. But I think they understood that it didn't have anything to do with us, and that none of us wanted that. None of it was not even a thought or a possibility in any of our minds at the time. Because, like I said, now these guys, they get in the playoffs and they all switch around and they do all kinds of stuff. But that year, that moment at Texas, that was the first time anybody had really ever done anything that like that. And so it was really, really new and a little bit shocking for everybody.
Yeah, and I think what was so wild about it too is at that time, like you said, there wasn't really anybody doing that. And even now, it's just moving a couple guys. That was a whole pit crew swap.
That was an entire pit crew swap.
That
Yep.
was 7 for 7. That was everybody was getting that. And
I mean, they even swapped the behind the wall support. I mean, it was everybody.
it was like the 2014 then, right? 2014 winning that championship.
That was kind of it was intense.
And so did that lead to any kind of frustration behind the scenes with any of those guys? I feel like as a 48 crew member at that time, that it would have been hard not to be frustrated or super ticked off with, I know it's not, like you said, that it wasn't your guys' fault. You were just doing what was asked, but at the same time, you're coming in and that, you're replacing that guy, and you got to walk right up to him on pit road and be like, "Hey, this is my spot now." It would have been hard not to be frustrated with Chad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they were, right? Like, I'm sure they were all really upset. A lot of them didn't end up coming back to Hendrick after the season was over. They went and found other jobs at other places. They were all still very, very good pit crew guys. It's just sometimes you get in a funk, and I will tell you that working for Chad Knaus is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life. And those guys did it at a high level for a very, very long time. And I just imagine that at some point, like that starts to wear on you a lot.
Well, Colin, I know we have a lot more to talk about, but we're running short here on time. We'll have to do a part two at some point in the future. It was a great conversation. I really enjoyed having you on. For those that don't know, I get to call Colin a friend of mine, a close friend. We get to see Colin a couple times a year, so it'll be no issue getting part two here in the near future. It was great to hear about your start, your all the way lead up here to getting to Hendrick Motorsports and being part of a we'll say a half champion, but we all know that there's more to come. And like I said at the start, you're a two-time champion, and I wasn't counting that half champion. So we'll have to address that at a future time. But thanks for giving me your time today and coming on and talking to us here at Pit Pass Network.
Yeah, man. Happy to do it. And let me know when you want to sit down for round two.